Live from Chicago, I'm John Dempsey, and for Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Ron Gibbs. Mr. Gibbs is a Democrat, a public affairs consultant who worked on veterans policy issues for the Obama campaign last year. He's a Vietnam veteran and an adjunct professor at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. Ron, welcome.
Good to be here.
Good to have you here. Chris Roebling is our Republican tonight. Chris is a longtime friend of this program. He's a Republican strategist and commentator for WGN-TV News in Chicago. He's also a principal with the public relations firm Jane Thompson & Associates. Chris, welcome to you.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
And we're joined by Ralph Connor. He is the local legislation manager for the Heartland Institute, a libertarian free market public policy group based in Chicago. Mr. Connor has also devoted 20 years of public service to the Chicago suburb of Maywood, including 4 years as Maywood Village president. And as a person who grew up in Maywood, Ralph, I'm proud to have you on the show tonight.
It's my pleasure as well.
Thank you. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base here at the Sirius XM studios here on the near west side of the great city of Chicago. And our toll-free phone lines are open at 800-723-8289. That is 800-723-8289. Give us a call. We want to hear what's on your mind tonight. In hour number two, we'll be talking about the crisis in California. Does the state deserve a bailout? Will it get a federal bailout? We'll be talking with somebody from Bakersfield, California, in our second hour. But we begin our program tonight, the night before our nation sets time aside to honor the servicemen and women who have died fighting to protect our freedom. They fought to protect Americans from the evil that has always existed in our world, but which, for the first time, came to American shores on September 11th, 2001. I want to talk in our first hour about the debate that is raging right now in Washington about how we combat that evil, and specifically what we do with the men we capture and have captured in the war on terror. President Barack Obama announced as one of his first acts as president that his plan to shut down the Guantanamo Bay Naval Detention Center, where about 240 terror suspects are still being held. But this past week, the Democrat-led Senate handed Obama an embarrassing defeat, rejecting his request for the money to close Guantanamo by a vote of 90-6. Democrats and Republicans united in saying to the president, "We can't allow you to close Guantanamo until we know where these people will be transferred, and we do not want them transferred to prisons here in the United States." So, Ron Gibbs, you fought in Vietnam. You've advised the president on veterans issues. Did Obama miscalculate here by announcing that he wanted to close Gitmo before having a concrete plan of where we're going to send these people?
That's a very good question. And as to precede that, it's good to be here on Veterans Day weekend. And I want to, as we debate
Memorial Day weekend.
Memorial Day weekend, yeah. Excuse me. But as we are here for Memorial Day weekend, it really is important that we, you know, honor the warriors and as we debate the war. And I think for Memorial Day, that's very important. We're coming up now to almost 5,000 killed in action in Iraq and Afghanistan. So as we debate this today, I think that we have to keep in the forefront our troops that are out there fighting for our country. I think that President Obama on this issue did get outflanked, and I think the issue in some ways was redefined. It's a policy that the Bush administration was supportive of closing Guantanamo and moving forward as he promised in the campaign. The problem is getting Congress on board. I think there should have been more done to get a plan in place as to what to do with them. And I think he was surprised by the vote in the Senate.
Why did he not get a plan in place?
Well, that's a good question, and I would have advised him to have done that in advance.
He didn't call you.
Didn't call me.
Ralph Connor.
I think that you have to really realize, John, that basically the Obama administration is adopting the Bush program, but they have to paint it as if it's something new and improved, when in reality there's very few options about how to handle the types of prisoners and Guantanamo than what Bush was doing already. So you find that after all the rhetoric is laid aside, Obama is supporting Patriot Act wiretaps, email intercepts, military tribunals and predator drone attacks, all the things that Bush was really doing, he's doing, because there's very few alternatives in the war on terror. But the Democrats are disposed to pretend that there is no longer a war on terror, and so these things aren't necessary. And it's kind of a shallow way of getting to it, but a lot of it is subterfuge.
But Chris Roebling, Obama ran for 2 or 3 years just blasting Bush at every step of the way, saying, you know, basically everything Bush has done, or most of the things Bush has done regarding securing our country, have been wrong. And now, as Ralph just said, he's repeating a lot of the strategies.
Obama also ran as a reformer, and those of us who know him from Chicago know that he doesn't have a reform bone in his body or a reform credit to his resume. So he ran to the left on international and foreign and intelligence and military policy. And now, as I think Ralph and Ron to some extent are conceding or pointing out, he's governing from the center in that area. He ran on this in the center on economic and domestic policy. He's now governing on the left. So he's all over the map. He's unreliable. And I think that if you take a close look at the text, it is worse than he's adopting the Bush policy, which is a good thing because the Bush policy was a good policy. And Cheney was a good vice president. But it's worse than that with a few changes cosmetically. If you go and you look at the text of the National Archives speech, there was really something profane about
it. Profane?
I think it was a profane speech for him to give steps away from the sacred documents that encapsulate the founding of our republic. The intellectual honesty that one would expect from somebody who would position himself so close to the writings of Adams and Jefferson, et cetera, and he's talking about facts trimmed to reach a preordained political position, he really could have been talking or describing himself and how he behaved in the campaign, where he, I think, very abusively discussed these issues and in accordance with his preordained political decision, and the facts, as we now see on Guantanamo, simply were never there.
So Ron Gibbs, what do you
but
say
I,
to that?
But I think, again, we're getting away from this is an important issue, but in some ways I feel it's a sidebar from the Bush administration. I think it's something that, unfortunately, Mr. Cheney and Mr. Limbaugh and others have jumped upon in redefining the foreign policy in light of what we just do with Guantanamo Bay. And so I think, you know, in some ways we have to get back to the fact of the Iraq war, our Afghan policy, and the direction that he is steering this country. This issue will be resolved. I think it has to be approached in a bipartisan manner. And just the way Republicans are saying that supporting of it, I think there should be a bipartisan effort to figure out where to put these prisoners, okay, in a maximum security facility, whether it be a military here or somewhere. But we should, you know, in a bipartisan matter, agree that this is the problem and come up with a solution.
I disagree. This is all a waste of time. Guantanamo is the best. It's the best solution out of a list of very horrible solutions. This is the best solution. What we need to do is focus on defeating the enemy.
That's Chris Roebling.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Get focus on that and not on this issue. This issue can be resolved.
We will be back from Chicago. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. We want to hear from you tonight.
There's nothing generic about your body, about the way it moves, the way it heals, the way it aches. Your pain isn't generic. Your pain reliever shouldn't be either. Tylenol works in ways that have been trusted and proven for over 50 years. With patented technology and clinical trials, no store brand can match. Because a body as unique as yours deserves more than a generic pain reliever. Feel better. Tylenol. Use only as directed.
Hey, Mini Dealer.
Hi.
I heard every Mini has no-cost maintenance, but does that really include the important stuff?
Try me.
Brake pads.
Included.
Air filters.
Included.
Oil changes.
Included.
Brake rotors?
Included. Look, I can include stuff for 3 years, and that could save you up to $1,100 over our competitors.
Wiper blade inserts.
No, that's not included.
Really?
I'm just kidding. They're included.
Wow.
Boot to Bonnet no-cost maintenance covers 3 years or 36,000 miles, and it's only from Mini. For details, visit miniusa.com/info.
From coast to coast, from border to border, you're listening tonight to Beyond the Beltway. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. 1-800-723-8289. We're talking about Guantanamo. Let's go to the west suburbs of Chicago. Mark is listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening. I have a modest proposal for you. On the proviso, if we give up the notion of American exceptionalism, of our judicial sovereignty and primacy in the legal system, we could find a solution to the detainee problem and the domestic problem investigating the possible malfeasance of the Bush administration. President Obama reconvenes another Geneva Convention on the detention and treatment of non-state actors involved in international crime, i.e. terrorism, human and drug trafficking, piracy, and other mafia activities, and let the world court investigate, arrest, try, and imprison those found guilty. The U.S. must submit and participate in this new tribunal.
Why must the U.S. do this?
Pardon me?
Why must? You said the U.S. must do this.
Well, that's been the problem. We, you know, are now in a quandary because we don't want them in this country. We don't want them in our court system. And yet we have not, through the Senate, gone through the International Criminal Court.
Chris Roebling, what do you think about that?
The International Criminal Court is not set up to do international terrorist cases like this. And I think that anytime you want to get a big public international legal convention going, there's something to be said for that. No state agrees in advance to ratify the treaty that may or may not result from such a convention. And the United States should not agree in advance any more than France or Papua New Guinea or Australia. So I don't think we have to, quote, must agree in advance. I think if you get the international community addressing some of these issues, that's always a good idea.
Let's go to Ralph Connor.
Yeah, I had some input on that because what's happening is the International Criminal Court has no teeth. In essence, it crashes when it gets to the level of the UN Security Council, because what happens is, as long as China and Russia and the United States do not go fully in support of action against terrorists, then it would not happen because they would veto the action of the International Criminal Court. They would find some excuse like the Rome Statute that they're using to protect the dictator in Darfur in Sudan right now, although he's had a warrant issued for his arrest from the International Criminal Court. It has no teeth.
Let's go to Ashtabula, Ohio. Steve is listening to us on WKBN. Hi, Steve.
Good evening, gentlemen. Before I address, sort of echo what the gentleman who was just on phoned in just said, I want to address the question of intellectual dishonesty that was just brought up, which has pretty much been pervasive since conservatives agreed to democracy in the first place and have done everything in their power to undermine it, and dialogue since. And if I could, I'd like to make the point by bringing up what was on the show a few weeks ago regarding the fairness doctrine and so on and so forth. The gentlemen that were on arguing against the fairness doctrine, which, by the way, I myself am not in favor of, but the Republicans arguing against it were trying to make the case that we have a so-called liberal media. When I turned on my television that morning, I saw Gingrich and I saw Dick Cheney and I saw Karl Rove and the whole cast of characters from the right on national TV. They clearly have a voice. It is not biased.
Okay, Steve, but you're talking about the fairness doctrine. We're talking about Guantanamo. What are
right.
your thoughts
and,
on?
And my point is, the gentleman brought up intellectual dishonesty tonight, and the gentleman who just called in about Guantanamo was talking about the fact that we need to be able to deal with these people. Obama is a little confused, perhaps, because who would believe that the central argument of Republicanism is we don't have anything to do with these people? Obama made the point during his speech in the rotunda there that Bush, Cheney have got us into this mess because they have basically used extra-legal methods, outside our own methods, outside of any kind of world methods of law. What we have done is we have created a legal quandary here. I can't believe there's a town in California was on the news tonight. They'd love to have the Guantanamo guys. They'd like to fill up that prison. This is a spurious argument.
Thank you for joining us, Steve Roebling.
Since I'm the one who questioned the intellectual honesty of Barack Obama tonight, and I have many other times on this program, I'll just answer Steve by saying this. The extent to which Bush and Cheney and their administration were dealing with these issues in a vacuum was an expression of the extent to which the international legal community, the public international legal community, had not yet adapted things like the Geneva Conventions, which are directed to uniformed actors of sovereign states involved in belligerence, to the circumstance that we now find, which is ununiformed, unorganized, non-state actors hiding among civilian populations, using civilians as shields, bombing civilians, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, you are right. They were at the forefront because they were doing things that needed to be done and statute or international treaty obligations hadn't necessarily advanced to that point. It's not the point you want to get from the – that's not what you'll get from the New York Times, but that's what exactly was going on.
Ron Gibbs, what about this idea of a world court to do?
Well, I think that's getting away from the problem at hand. I think President Obama is very pragmatic, and I think to keep a handle on this, that – would be something that I would not really see us wanting to do or him wanting to do, going to an international tribunal or a court at this juncture. I think that these problems can be resolved hopefully in a bipartisan manner, and I think it's incumbent upon the Republicans to step forward with solutions as opposed to just shouting out this problem.
Our solution is Guantanamo. It was, and I want to tell you, for
the
last 18
months, the Bush administration has said that they wanted to close Guantanamo.
For the last 18 months, Condi Rice and other representatives of the administration were going around to all of these allies saying, look, we want to get rid of Guantanamo. You hate Guantanamo. Your voters hate Guantanamo. We want to get rid of Guantanamo. Will you please take some of these people who have a connection to your area? And the answer was to the Bush administration the same as the answer to the Obama administration. No, we won't. You've got them. It's your problem.
Why can we not keep Guantanamo open?
We can if we want to. I'm fine with it.
Ralph, what do you think?
I think it's more symbolism. When you look at the—
But we're not torturing people at Guantanamo.
Well, the idea of an EIT, the Enhanced Interrogation Techniques, is something that has been supported internationally for years at times of war. And certainly the speaker's current problems, which have her in Shanghai hiding out, is something that—
Nancy Pelosi in China.
It could have been avoided were there not such a concerted effort to demonize the Bush administration to the point of criminalization of the EIT usage. And as a result of that, it created the quandary that she's in now by demonizing that so much. Someone said, oh, by the way, if it's that criminal and that illegal, why didn't you do something
about it? Why'd you stay silent?
Barack, so then she lied as opposed to coming straight.
And Barack added to that misrepresentation because at the archives, he says, we've banned it forever. And that is not true.
They're still using it.
He's retained it for himself personally, which is sensible, and we appreciate that kind of judgment from Barack Obama. But then don't go lie to the people about it and say you've banned it forever.
He still has executive authority to utilize EIT if he feels and deems that is necessary.
Let's go to Eduardo listening to us on WLS in Chicago. Hi, Eduardo.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, I think the Congress did this move to save their hives next year in case the Republicans rout them. You know, we've shown that these people go back on the battlefield and do these same terrorist acts. So we should put them on somewhere like Padre Island over there by Texas.
Yeah, it's very interesting because on our own flagship station, WLS in Chicago, Senator Dick Durbin was on our morning program and was asked by our hosts, Don and Roma, would you support bringing them to Illinois prisons? And at first, Durbin said, well, nobody's ever escaped from the Marion Federal Prison in southern Illinois. And then he quickly backtracked by saying, well, Marion is not a supermax prison. So nobody, I don't think, wants to raise their hand and say, send these people to my state in a prison in my state. Do you agree with that, Ron?
Well, totally. Again, if there was enough money put forth, maybe with some areas of the country to incentivize them, they may change their mind if it's job creation or an economic engine in some ways. Some communities want jails in their community because of job creation, but I don't see that as a solution at this juncture. And back to the point of Guantanamo, I think it is a symbol that has been challenged internationally. Nationally, and been very negative to American foreign policy. So,
up to the point of Tom Hundley in the Tribune last week writing a horrible story, just a completely misrepresenting the situation at Guantanamo in the Chicago Tribune magazine. I mean, the mythology that has arisen about Guantanamo, starting with the European left and then going to the left throughout the world and being trumpeted by irresponsibly by the Obama campaign last year as it was misrepresenting foreign policy and domestic policy to the voters, has overtaken all reality.
But Roebling, what about the argument that people do not escape from the TAMS prison in southern Illinois
or from the
Supermax in Colorado?
The moment they come into the continental United States, they're under our jurisdiction and they enjoy every right afforded by our Constitution. And they should. That's one of the reasons why they're still over there under military tribunals.
Ralph Connor.
It's not a question of escape or escapability. It has nothing to do with that. It's only a question of planting the seeds of some type of Islamic radicalism within the prison system, which is, you know, axiomatic of what recently happened with the phony black terrorists, alleged black Muslims that were found in New York ready to bomb a synagogue with some phony dynamite or something. This is the whole idea. Well, we've already got this type of thing happening, so why should we fear it, you know?
We had four people arrested in New York. Whether they're the gang that can't shoot straight or whether they were serious terrorists, we don't know that yet, but we'll certainly find out in the coming weeks. We've got to take a break, but we will be back after this. This is Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289, coming to you tonight from Chicago.
Where do you go for more fun in the sun?
Welcome to Bullfrog Nation,
where Bullfrog Sunblock's UV extender blocks more UVA, UVB rays for long-lasting protection. And no sunblock's more waterproof. So whether you're teeing off in the Sunshine State or hiking in the land of the midnight sun, extend the fun with UV extender.
From coast to coast.
To your backyard.
Bullfrog with UV extender. One nation under the sun. Use as directed.
I'm Carl Edwards. As a NASCAR driver, I can't let allergies slow me down. That's why I use Claritin. It works hard on my toughest allergy symptoms. And unlike many other allergy medicines, it won't make you drowsy. For me, Claritin really is the perfect allergy medicine. Stay alert, stay focused. Live Claritin Clear with non-drowsy Claritin.
Right now, you can get 10 free Claritin tablets for 10 free days of non-drowsy allergy relief with the Claritin 30 plus 10 bonus pack. 10 free tablets, 10 free days of relief at a store near you. Use as directed.
We are back here in Chicago. I'm John Dempsey sitting in for Bruce Dumont tonight on Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. We're joined tonight by Republican Chris Roebling, Democrat Ron Gibbs, and our Libertarian Ralph Connor of the Heartland Institute. Ron Gibbs, you were saying during the break that as a Democrat, you acknowledge this is a misstep by President Obama. How can he get back on track and stop the Republicans and the right from continuing to use this to tarnish him?
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's a misstep. And President Obama, again, pragmatism rules. And I think, again, this is a policy, I'm repeating, that the Bush administration supported of closing Guantanamo. That is what's agreed upon. The misstep is calculating where to put the detainees, all right? I think admit that and move on to come up with a solution, a bipartisan solution, and embrace Republicans to what do we do? Do we keep it open longer or not? But I think there are so many other important issues that we need to be talking about that Republicans have looked upon this, as I said, the Achilles heel of Obama or a chink in the armor, and it's being blown out of proportion relative to the other important issues, and it's obfuscation of where we are in Afghanistan, in Iraq, to the real picture on our foreign policy.
But I'm wondering why the Republicans, if they haven't really been able to lay a glove on this guy, why would they just give up this issue? I think they're going to keep it in play for as long as possible.
Well, I think it's up to them, to the president, to redefine the issue and come up with a solution to where I think Republicans hopefully cannot say no to.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that it's only going to last so long and we are going to move on to other things. But I think it is important and I think it does speak. The issue in and of itself is only as big as it is. And there's probably a lot more agreement than disagreement. But I do think that it speaks to other elements of the Obama situation, which should not be overlooked. It definitely was a mix-up between David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel and other people involved in the administration in terms of getting into a situation where your hand is slapped 90 to 6. Number two, it has to do with what I consider to be the superficiality of the so-called thinking behind so-called Obama foreign policy. I mean, if he's got 300 great intellectuals from Stanford, Yale, Harvard, and the University of Chicago advising him on all elements of international policy, this would not have happened. So there's something in that equation that's not right. People ought to take that for what it is, but we have to resolve this and move on.
But I think it was a mistake, but he was attempting to show leadership, though it might be wrong. And I think there's a point to where the president is being inclusionary, consultative, and bipartisan. And when people turn their back on bipartisanship, then he can assert his leadership as president and do what he thinks is right. And he may be wrong sometimes. And in this case, I think it was a misstep. Yeah. But I think he's strong enough to pull back. He's admitted to mistakes in the past. And I think that can be reconciled quickly to come up and say to the Republican Party, damn it, let's come up with a solution to this and stop this all this rhetoric. Because that's where we are right now, spending time in this program talking about, I think, a lot of rhetoric, of which the Republicans are just lynching onto because, you know what? There's nothing else you've come up with so far.
Well, we'll get on to other topics here.
1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Wilmette, Illinois, the great North Shore of Chicago. Betty, listening to us on WLS. Hi, Betty.
Oh, hi, John. I'm enjoying your program. I greatly agree with the last speaker. In fact, he's saying a lot of the things I wanted to say. So let me pick out just one small thing. I've listened to the Obama speech twice. I liked it so much that when it came on the second time, I had to listen the whole thing through. I think it's very patriotic, it's magnificent, and it's respective of the Constitution. I think it was a mistake, probably, to have that vote in Congress before the full plan was outlined. But I think the way he organized five groups of people that were in Guantanamo, and there was only one group, the fifth group, that were probably so dangerous that they could not be released. And there certainly are safe prisons all over the country. I can't name any of them, but Dick Durbin mentioned it. He didn't mention the right one. And one of the Republican senators, too, by the way, it might have been Sessions. I'm not sure that it was Sessions, but it was at least as prominent as he, who said absolutely that they could be imprisoned someplace in the United States in one of the top prisons. That's about all I have to say. I like the speaker who spoke earlier, and I agree with everything he said.
Thank you, Betty.
Okay.
Betty, listening to us tonight on WLS in Chicago. Let's go to Cedar Park, Texas. Paul, listening to us on KLBJ. Hi, Paul.
Hi, John. Thank you for taking my call. I guess the timing is great because I disagree with Ron.
Are you on a speakerphone, Paul?
I'm sorry about that.
That's
better?
Yeah, okay. That's better.
I disagree with Ron, and I guess my comment is directly stated to him specifically on his recent comment about the rhetoric and we need to stop the rhetoric, and I find that ironic. Considering that his opening remarks uses the focus-tested, Bush or Cheney-Limbaugh correlation and trying to kind of strike that emotional chord. And it irritates me because I've been hearing that for a couple of weeks now. And I just think that there's many Americans who see not only this issue but all the issues that we face is very serious. And we both sides need to stop with the rhetoric. And that includes Mr. Gibbs and him sliding in, again, that focus-tested language. It's cheapening debate. It's the debate. It's transparent. And I would just I thank you for actually getting it back on course, and it got a little bit more substantive.
Thank you, Paul.
But very interesting. I'd like to hear his comment on that.
Thank you, Paul. What do Limbaugh and Cheney have to do with a blunder by Obama on Guantanamo?
Well, they should offer up solutions than exacerbating than the misstep that I admitted to that I think was done. All right. Constructive. The loyal opposition should propose solutions and not just restate the problem. And I think that's what we're looking for here is a solution to it. And, whether there's a longer time at Guantanamo while we find an international place or someplace in the United States, that can be done, okay? But it has to be done in a bipartisan way. And I think that's what I'm saying.
Ralph Connor.
The essential problem is that the reason the president had no plan is that Bush had no plan. And basically, he's enacting the same type of post-911 remedies that Bush had put in place. What needs to happen here is if you really want to stop Washington as usual, which unfortunately the president has fallen into, you need to stop the witch hunt against the Bush administration officials that were engaged in EIT. You need to stop. That's what got the speaker in trouble now, trying to be holier than thou about the use of EIT by the former Bush administration officials and starting a witch hunt as if to say that there is some compelling interest on the part of the nation in bringing to justice Bush administrations because of their heavy-handed interrogation of terrorists.
Yeah,
so
EIT,
I don't know. That needs to stop.
EIT, enhanced interrogation techniques. Ron Gibbs, is that a problem with some on the left who keep wanting to resurrect George Bush and put George Bush on trial?
The president mentioned Bush 25 times in his speech, and every time he was stoning the previous administration, I thought we're going to move forward.
But Betty and Wilmette thought it was beautiful.
She was
in trance. Betty and Wilmette was loving it.
Roebling, Betty is my cousin, so watch it.
Betty, we love you. We love you.
What do you think about that, Ron Gibbs, what Ralph just said?
Well, I think we need to look forward and not backward. Okay, and I think that
so it's a mistake then for
I'm not saying it's a
people
there's
talk,
a, there's
talk,
a, there's
talk
a
about
time,
truth
there's,
commission.
There's a time for everything, and I think again I started out on this Memorial Day talking about honoring the warrior
right.
and not the war, and therefore to me looking back is going to do a disservice and possibly some ways harm the troops by that finger pointing, and let us look to the future on that, and we'll get in.
All right, would you agree, Ron? Cheney made a phenomenal point in his talk at AEI after the president's talk at the archives. He said the language of American values should not be solely in the possession of the Obama administration to talk about what it wants to do. The people who were serving, career people who were serving at the time of the Bush administration, not political people, career people, were being told that they were getting their legal memos. They were saying, this is what you can do. This is what we need you to do. Will you go please do this? And they were working to their very best ability in the best tradition of the CIA, which I had the privilege once of working for, and the military. To extract information in accordance with the guidance they were given. Now, would you agree that they are no less possessive of American values than, you know, Code Pink?
No, I'm not.
You don't agree with that?
I do. I'm agreeing with you.
You do agree? Yeah. Okay, good.
Let's go to Boise, Idaho.
Yes.
Bill is listening to us on KBOI. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a small comment in regards to the mission statement of Guantanamo and how easy it would be to change the mission statement of Guantanamo, change the name to something that is harmonious to what we're trying to do, installation world peace, someplace where these people can be filtered and moved on to other countries, not into the U.S. because they're perfectly safe right where they are. But you change the mission, you change the image, you change the name, and the president takes ownership of it. The other stuff goes by the wayside, and you don't have this day-to-day bickering.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for calling. Ralph Connor, is that possible to have a kindler, gentler Guantanamo? I mean, just
well,
change the image?
I think that it's all a question of changing the names to protect the guilty. I think in this case, we need to realize that Bush was accurate. Obama, as a professor, details the five groups of prisoners and whatnot, and many people are always impressed by his intellectual acumen. But at the end of the day, he has no answers, and that's why Congress took the position that it did and did not give him what he wanted.
Let's go to Richard in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening to us on WNOX. Hi, Richard. Richard, are you there? Let's move on to Don, who is in Wilmington, North Carolina, listening to us on WAAV. Hi, Don. Don is not there. Well, we'll take a break, and we will be back. 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway. And when we come back, I want to get into this issue of whether bringing a dangerous Islamic radical into an American prison would, in fact, run the risk of spreading that venom inside an American prison and indoctrinating other Americans who are being held behind bars. This is Beyond the Beltway from Chicago.
Hi, I'm Major League Baseball pitcher John Smoltz. For most of my life, I've been a lot more concerned with my pitching arm than my prostate health. But then I learned that 1 in 3 men will develop prostate issues. I don't like that stat one bit. Now, I take a complete multivitamin with more. One-a-day Men's. It's got more selenium than Centrum to support prostate health, and it supports heart health too, which for me is a winning combination. Strike!
One a day men's, the official multivitamin of Major League Baseball.
Get this. Joey and me were supposed to go to this concert next week, right? But then something terrible happened. Joey was driving without a seatbelt. But he didn't wreck. No, he got pulled over. Now Joey has to pay for a seatbelt ticket instead of a concert ticket, and I have to go by myself. How lame is that? So Joey, if you're out there, you're an idiot. Wear your seatbelt or you'll get a ticket.
All across the country, cops are cracking down. Click it or ticket. Day and night. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
We are back this evening on Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from the Sirius XM radio studios on the Great West Side of the city of Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in tonight for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289, talking about Guantanamo Bay and what will happen if you put a terrorist from Guantanamo in an American prison. Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee, and talk to Richard, listening to us on WNOX. Hi, Richard.
What is notice, John?
What's your comment?
Well, as a Illinois native, I'm proud to be in here, and I'd like to say, first of all, a comment or question, if I may. It seems to me that if you let the terrorists from Guantanamo Bay into our prison system, and they put their beliefs out there the right way, well, that's going to spread faster than a head cold in daycare. And for anybody that has kids, you know how fast that can go. But it seems to me that this question comes down to, should these people have rights that us as U.S. citizens have, or should they not? And for me, I believe they should not. And closing Guantanamo Bay, I think, the problem, I think you might have touched on that before we went to break, though, two times ago, was if you bring it inside the continental United States, they're subject to a different set of laws. Isn't that right? Isn't that why we have to keep this in a separate area?
Yes. If they come inside the sovereignty and jurisdiction of the United States of America specifically, and they're you know, shelves and shelves of law books on this subject, then they are entitled to and they receive, and God bless America, they get all of the rights that we get. That is absolutely the case.
And they should not.
I agree with the caller. I don't think they should. I think that's why I think keeping them offshore in a non-U.S. location. Now, the Supreme Court has evolved our law. Our law has developed. So I didn't think 3 years ago that any of these guys were entitled to habeas corpus. The Supreme Court speaks for the law of this country, and the Supreme Court says they do in many cases, maybe not most. And so, you know, it's an evolving situation, and everybody's had to try and keep up with where the law is.
Ralph Connor.
I think that's where I stand also. So I'd just like to say, you know, with that, you know, American prisons, well, they're only good enough for the murders and rapists of America. They can keep everybody else. We have enough of those in this country to deal with as it is. I believe keep these separate. And then I guess to finish up the phone call, what about a Puerto Rico type place? You know, some place that's not part of the continental.
Well,
it's
still a U.S. territory.
Guam, Marianas, Puerto Rico, all of that is U.S. sovereignty, and
right.
It's all Constitution. God bless America.
Richard, thank you very much. Ralph, you were saying.
I think that there is a valid concern about the risk of Wahhabi type radical Islamic teachings going into the prison inmate population, particularly black prisoners. I think that you have to take note that most recently, after the debacle of the black terrorists that were found in New York, they were Muslims supposedly, and they had supposedly learned their radical Islamic terrorism from prison. But yet we still had a black Muslim prelate and a rabbi in New York. They held a joint press conference to which they came and basically dismiss the validity of those types of terrorist activities as being officially Islamic acts. I think that we're in more of a danger from prisoners buying into the narco economy and the gang and drug urban terrorism type thing than we do from radical Islam.
Isn't it also possible that you, if you brought a terrorist to the Supermax prison in Colorado, you keep that person separate from other inmates. You closely monitor who they associate with. Roebling, is that a possibility? Can we dismiss the idea of them radicalizing other inmates by simply segregating them and preventing their contact with these other inmates.
Well, by definition, the supermax is 23 hours of isolation per day, 1 hour of exercise, which can be with others, doesn't have to be, and frequently is not. So in a supermax situation, you're talking about pretty much isolation. But what Ralph is referring to, there are a lot of prisons out there, and there are a lot of Louis Farrakhan-backed Islamic-related ministries out there. And some of those are crossing lines. And that's not me talking. There's a stack of reports and findings and legal judicial findings about that.
One point I'd like to make on this, too, is just from the American public. I mean, there's two points. One is the risk and, what is the risk we're talking about here? But aside from that, it's the perception. And is there really a danger from it in reality? Maybe, maybe not. There is isolation. They may not have contact. But the perception from the public as such that it wouldn't be safe. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the conundrum in many ways.
I think that's really a misconception because they're not safe now. And the streets in Chicago are just as dangerous as if you were in a terrorist country because of the proliferation of people shooting because of the narco economy and people that are in prison getting released without any aspect of being reentered into society as productive units. So I don't know. I think you need prison reform and you need to have some form of addressing during the incarceration period, behavior modification.
But you're not – are you suggesting that the terrorists from Guantanamo are reformable? I mean, if we brought them to our prisons here
– I think you have to look at the five groups that the president mentioned and try to select from those which ones are reformable.
What do you think about that idea, Roebling?
I think some probably are. Most probably are not. I think that with all respect to the five groups, the ones who made it to Guantanamo – overwhelmingly were the ones who were the toughest of the tough and the hardest of the hard. And I have a hard time believing that some of those people with the Wahhabi background they've got from overseas madrasas, they're not going to give that up.
And on that note, we say goodbye to hour one of our Beyond the Beltway discussion of national politics tonight, coming to you from Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Stay with us. There's a lot more to come.
Everything seems to add to it. Relief can't come fast enough. Now there's new Bayer Quick Release Crystals, a whole new form of pain relief from Bayer that dissolves quickly on your tongue. With an extra pain-relieving booster, it's ready to go to work faster than caplets or tablets, which take time to dissolve. So before you know it, you're feeling a whole lot better. New Bayer Quick Release Crystals with a bold citrus taste. Just rip, pour on your tongue, and expect relief fast. Take with water as directed.
Get this. Joey and me were supposed to go to this concert next week, right? But then something terrible happened. Joey was driving without a seatbelt. But he didn't wreck. No, he got pulled over. Now Joey has to pay for a seatbelt ticket instead of a concert ticket, and I have to go by myself. How lame is that? So Joey, if you're out there, you're an idiot. Wear your seatbelt or you'll get a ticket.
All across the country, cops are cracking down. Click it or ticket. Day and night. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Tempur-Pedic guarantees better sleep and now wants to give you a brand new Ford Mustang convertible. Test drive a Tempur-Pedic mattress at a participating retail store for your chance to win a 2009 Mustang. Experience a Tempur-Pedic for yourself. You'll sleep better, feel better, and get more out of life. Call 1-800-433-2720 or visit Tempur-Pedic.com/experience. That's 1-800-433-2720 or Tempur-Pedic.com/experience. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. See website for official rules. Ford Motor Company not affiliated with Tempur-Pedic promotion or affiliates in any way. Game ends 5/31/09.
When your allergies hit, hit back with new Claritin Liquid Gels, now available at CVS Pharmacy. Claritin Liquid Gels capsules are the first and only non-drowsy allergy medicine with pure liquid power, releasing a wave of relief for your itchy, watery eyes, sneezing, and runny nose. Depend on Claritin Liquid Gels and live Claritin Clear. This week, CVS Pharmacy Extra Care Card members can save on Claritin Liquid Gels. CVS Pharmacy, for all the ways you care. Use as directed.
Psst, hey, over here.
What?
Yeah, it's me, the printed internet directions you crumpled up and left in the back seat. What's with the cold shoulder lately?
Oh, right, I'm sorry. I got a TomTom GPS.
What?
Yeah, I kind of got tired of risking my life trying to read you while driving, so now I just plug in an address and TomTom gets me there much faster with clear spoken directions.
Well, that's dumb.
No, what's dumb is the 18 steps you give me just to get out of the driveway.
I was just being thorough.
Say goodbye to printed internet directions. Say hello to TomTom.
Itchy bug bites, irritated skin. Summer means it's time for new Gold Bond Anti-Itch Lotion and Cream. Heat rash? Get the quick fix. Dry skin itch? Get the lasting fix. New Gold Bond Anti-Itch Lotion and Cream with two proven itch fighters for relief that's fast and healing moisturizers for relief that lasts. Poison ivy itch? Look for the healing seal. New Gold Bond Medicated Anti-Itch Lotion and Cream. The quick fix for almost every itch. Find them in the first aid aisle. Use as directed.
We are back for hour two of Beyond the Beltway, live from Harpo XM Studios in Chicago, Illinois. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Our guests this evening, Democrat Ron Gibbs, Republican Chris Roebling, and Libertarian Ralph Connor of the Chicago-based Heartland Institute. We have all been hearing a lot in recent weeks about bailouts, whether it's been the banking industry, giant insurance companies, or the automotive industry. The argument has been that some institutions in this country are simply too big to fail. Well, now we have some people in the U.S. saying we have a state that's too big to fail. That state is California, the most populated state in our nation, a state with an economy that is larger than many countries around the world. California is in economic shambles. There's a budget deficit estimated at $21 billion. And this past week, California voters rejected 5 of 6 propositions on the ballot to help the state out of its financial fix. So what's next? Let's go to Bakersfield, California, and talk to Inga Barks. She's the host of the 9 to Noon program on AM 1180 KERN radio in Bakersfield, California. Inga, welcome to you. What is going on with your state?
Well, hey, John, let me tell you, first of all, happy Memorial Day weekend to you and all of the listeners. If you hear ambient sound in the background, it's bagpipes because I'm at a Memorial Day event, so forgive the noise. But I'll tell you what's happening in California is for far too long we have had a legislature that spends without conscience. And they trick the people, I think, by the words that they use into voting for programs that then we have to fund. And we've just, our eyes were too big for our stomach. That's the problem. Our eyes are too big for our stomach. We have an immoral and corrupt legislature.
Now, some liberal critics say that California, as an outgrowth of the Prop 13 tax rebellion back in the 70s, has swung the pendulum too far in favor of the anti-tax forces. For instance, is it true that you need a two-thirds vote to pass a tax increase?
Well, it is true that you need a two-thirds vote of the legislature to pass a tax increase, but if what liberals are saying is true, John, then we wouldn't have the second or first, depending on what you're looking at, highest tax rate in the nation, right? I mean, thank God for the two-thirds vote. It would be worse.
But what is going to happen, though? I mean, Governor Schwarzenegger now is talking about severe cuts. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. He is talking about severe cuts, and let me say to that a lot of us are thinking out here in the real world that these are cuts to programs that shouldn't have been created in the first place, and cuts to pensions, cuts to jobs that shouldn't have been created in the first place. So when he says, for instance, he's going to fire 5,000 state employees, what you got to know is he's hired 10,000 just in the last 12 months. This state's budget has grown it has doubled in the last 10 years, but the population hasn't.
Is there sentiment in California, Inga, for a federal bailout? Is that something that's going to be requested? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are that the governor might come to that moment. He says he's not going to do it. The legislature says it's not going to happen. If they do, I honestly suspect a revolt by the people. I really do. We don't want a bailout. We are not too big to fail, and we need to suffer the consequences of our overspending.
Roebling, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Inga.
Well, I was just going to say we've got the burden of many, many undocumented, low-income people who are using the system and using the services here. We've got unions that run amok and own the state. We have pension reform that's got our pension alone in the state of California is a $400 billion unfunded liability. So we just can't have a bailout. We can't be helped.
And the reason we're talking about this tonight on this national show is that this is not just a California issue. We've got a problem similar to this in Illinois, where we're broadcasting mm-hmm. from. There are states all over this country tonight that have huge budget deficits. And Roebling, if our government bails out California, won't every other state in the union line up for a bailout?
Every other state will line up for a bailout, Inga. And I want you to go back to two things. Number one, on this two-third requirement. To pass a budget or a tax increase, you need a two-thirds majority in either the House in both the House and the Senate out in Sacramento.
Right.
How come the people who have wanted to restrain government have not been able to use that to prevent this rapid growth that you describe?
And the rapid hiring and things like that.
Is that questions for me?
Yeah, that's
for you, Inga.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it only takes three Republicans in each House to vote yes, and you've got tax increases. So to their credit, it's actually been many, many years since we've had a tax increase by a two-thirds vote. And this year it happened because six Republicans folded and offered up their vote. But the reason that we have all this overspending is because the people have, the people have participated to the degree that we are constantly voting for bond measures and ballot initiatives that require funding. And it's mandated by law that government find a way to fund it. And so we're part and parcel of this overspending.
Your proposition process. Well, we always hear about proposition this, proposition that. Okay.
My question.
I mean, for instance, you get a water bond. We vote yes for it because we think we're going to finally get some water to relieve us from our drought. The money is all spent on environmental research. It never makes it to the building phase.
Our Democrat Ron Gibbs has a question, a comment.
To the solution to the problem, I guess. One, you had these several propositions which just came up for a vote, and they all failed except the one that was to, I think, freeze legislators' salaries.
Raises.
And to the voter, I'm not sure that they educated enough to understand, one, what all these propositions meant in the end game.
No, I disagree with you entirely.
But only 14% of the people, as I saw, came out to vote in response. So 14% of the people voted on these propositions
What percentage of people should we allow to vote before we consider it legitimate? I mean, of the percentage that voted, they voted no on these ballot initiatives to a greater degree than Democrats voted for Barack Obama in California.
Inga, do you run the risk of a certain amount of chaos when you have a legislature, but then you don't let the legislature have any power by giving all the power with all of these citizen initiatives? Why even have a legislature then?
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, first of all, why would we give all the power to the legislature? We need balance. The state of California's legislature is out of control.
But you've got gridlock right now. Nothing's happening.
Well, I hope it continues to nothing to happen. I mean, what we've got is liberals who are creating programs that I have to fund, and they're ridiculous programs. Do you know right now we've got judges who have allowed a federal receiver in the state of California to say that we have to come up with $7 billion to give a particular level of medical care to our inmates that the average citizen doesn't get? It's ridiculous.
Sounds like you're headed for a real conflagration out there.
Well, given I'm looking for a solution to be offered here.
Yeah.
One, where is the governor now? These propositions have failed. You're $20+ billion in a deficit. So is the governor going to reach? Is the governor going to reach any kind of rapprochement with the state legislature to do something to resolve this, or is there bankruptcy?
Well, it is my hope that the governor goes back to the unions and they renegotiate the terms of their pensions and their pay. It's my hope that the governor rolls back some of the insane environmental regulations that have run business out. We've got hundreds of thousands of people fleeing the state annually, and they're taking their money with them. It's my hope that they will lower taxes and not raise taxes. And I have a feeling that if you lift regulations in this state and lower taxes, you'll see more revenues come in.
Inga Barks is with KERN Radio in Bakersfield, California. And Inga, we thank you very much for joining us tonight. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway, coming to you from Chicago. We'll be back after this.
Hello?
Brian, dude, it's me, Rush Hour Traffic.
Who?
Rush Hour, man. We used to meet up every day right after work.
Oh, yeah. Listen, Rush Hour, I have a TomTom GPS now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it has this feature called IQ Routes that knows all your regular patterns and habits, so it finds me the fastest way to get home and avoid you.
Well, we had some laughs, didn't we?
No, we did not.
Say goodbye to Rush Hour Traffic. Say hello to TomTom.
When you're really in pain, everything seems to add to it. Relief can't come fast enough. Now there's new Bayer Quick Release Crystals, a whole new form of pain relief from Bayer that dissolves quickly on your tongue. With an extra pain-relieving booster, it's ready to go to work faster than caplets or tablets, which take time to dissolve. So before you know it, you're feeling a whole lot better. New Bayer Quick Release Crystals with a bold citrus taste. Just rip, pour on your tongue, and expect relief fast. Take with water as directed.
We are back from Chicago, Beyond the Beltway. I'm John Dempsey, tonight sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Our phone number, 1-800-723-8289. We've been talking about the situation in California, a state with a $21 billion budget deficit. The voters last week did not approve several initiatives on the ballot. And the reason, gentlemen, that I think that this is an important issue to talk about on this national show is that California's economy is so large, it is such a huge state. Politically, it's an incredibly important state with more electoral votes than any other state. And I'm just wondering, maybe we can start with you, Ron Gibbs, our Democrat, what would be the effect on other states wanting to line up with their hands out if President Obama supports some kind of a loans or bailout for California?
Well, I agree with Chris. Everybody would be lining up there. I think that should be maybe not be called a bailout, but a last resort initiative. It seems that this should be worked out internally, constitutionally, within the state of California.
But they don't seem to be able. They seem to be a total loggerhead.
So if there is to be any kind of, quote, loan guarantees and the like, there would have to be strings attached, i.e. the change is two-thirds majority for enacting any kind of budgetary cuts. That would be like a string to be attached to it, which other states then would have to then agree to if that were to ever happen.
Ralph Connor.
I think that what you're talking about is the systemic nature of taxpayers' bill of rights type legislation like Proposition 13, which said that it takes two-thirds majority. These types of things are always hated by the tax and spend type legislators. And so they're just looking for an excuse to wipe out that type of legislation and then go back to just pure tax and spend. They're not going to resolve the issues of the deficit spending, which not only is in California. You have to realize in the 2009 budget right now, we've got an $802 billion deficit. And that includes $184 billion for TARP as well as $787 billion stimulus bill. So nationwide, we're finding these systemic problems where the revenues are just not there, and we're just mortgaging the future of the children and grandchildren in California as well as the nation.
I think that people have got to understand that government costs something. And you cannot say at the same time, I want more government and I want to pay less, or I want more government and I want to pay the same. I think that these employee unions out there, the public employee unions, have had a field day. The Republicans have been reduced to barely a third, and that was the answer that Inga gave to my question. in either of those houses. So you get two or three Republicans and you've got your two-thirds and away you go on your tax and spend parade. And then these propositions out there, you know, part of the initiative referendum and recall progressive movement of the turn of the 19th into the 20th century really took hold out there in California, which was only about 50 years old as a state at the time. And that's where this all comes from. That's why they had a recall provision to get rid of Gray Davis and put in Arnold Schwarzenegger. And they've got an automatic funding provision in there that is just bankrupting the state.
1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Winnebago, Illinois. Sylvia listening to us on WLS. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi. Well, poor Inga and poor California. They can't even bring themselves to say illegal aliens. It's undocumented folks.
No, she said that. Hold on.
Yeah, I think Inga was critical of the illegal aliens.
She said that's one of the key drivers of their deficit.
Right.
Well, then use E-Verify before you dispense any government benefits, and you'll solve the problem within a matter of minutes, won't you?
Why don't
they just use E-Verify before they, you know, send out the disability and the welfare checks? Nothing stopping them.
Sylvia, thank you. California is a place that I think really needs a lot of reform.
I think she's pointing out something that's critical, because unless you're willing to address public policy as it relates to the cost of illegal immigration, then you're not really dealing with the problem that's busting California's budget. You can't have it both ways.
Let's go to the northwestern suburbs of Chicago, Schaumburg, Illinois. Brian, listening to us on WLS. Good evening, Brian.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. You know, it's been said that the beginning of a democracy comes when the people figure out how to vote themselves money or vote themselves the treasury.
And the beginning of the end. The beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end of a democracy comes when the people can vote themselves benefits and money. And that's where we are in spades in California and Illinois and probably many other states. And both political parties in this country are horrible. They are terrible institutions. They're both spineless. They pander to voters. All they care about is winning elections. They don't care about the future, just like American businesses. And neither party will attack illegal immigration because Hispanics are the future. To get the Hispanic vote, you have to pander to Hispanics. They'll never do anything to stop illegal immigration. You know, and here we are on Memorial Day weekend. We have American soldiers fighting overseas for whatever reason, but yet we do nothing to protect our own country. And they're not really fighting for a national America. They're just fighting for a marketplace, because all we are now is it's an international marketplace. Because that's what the politicians want. We have gun violence and drug dealers out of control on our border, people pouring in by the millions, and the politicians will not do anything about it because they're a bunch of cowards. And
Brian,
that's why we are where we are.
Brian, we thank you very much for calling us tonight. Let's go to the Quad Cities of Illinois. Let's talk to Kathleen listening to us on WLS. Good evening, Kathleen.
Hi there. Say, I just wanted to weigh in on Kindred Spirits with a caller from Bakersfield, California. I really agree with what she says. And when she talked about the $400 billion deficit or obligation with the pension in California, I had to agree that in Illinois, we face a huge problem with the pension. And I don't know if you knew this, but in calculating the pension for each government worker, they are allowed to use their overtime. And so you have many, many of these workers getting in as much overtime as they possibly can over a matter of, you know, years. And then the last 4 years get calculated into what they get for the rest of their lives in their pension.
We also have a situation in Illinois where a state worker could make $60,000 for his entire career and then spend the last 3 weeks of his career making $90,000, and his pension is set at $90,000.
But I'd like to go back to another one of these
organizational
issues out in California. I was one of those Republicans who never got on the bandwagon for term limits. I think the term limits are a very mixed blessing at best. Out in California, you see an effect of term limits that opponents like Henry Hyde, and not to put myself with Henry Hyde, but Henry Hyde and other smart people foresaw. The term limited members of the California General Assembly have very little interest
in what's going to happen in 8 years or what's going to happen in 16 years, because they're only going to be there for whatever it is, 6 or 8 years. You know, I mean, they have a very specific time that they can serve. Then they can shift to the other house and serve. They do that a little bit. But the point is, term limiting these legislators makes them prisoners of the now. The now and the immediate and the must-have and the let's pass and come on, Joe, get on board. Don't get run over by this train. The result of that across the country, I am convinced, certainly in California, I'm convinced if anybody, if poli sci professor does a study, I think the result across the country is they're more inclined to go along with this concession or that spending program or this tax increase to the detriment of everybody.
But I would couple that. I mean, I'm in favor looking at the term limit thing with campaign finance reform, because if you don't have term limits, then unless you come up with campaign finance reform, you're going to have people who are going to have safe seats and you're not going to have anybody to challenge them ever. So that, you know, term limits, I think, are good.
And political remedies will not matter unless you address the gorilla in the living room, which is really the issue of pension reform. And as long as you have the systems which are defined benefit pension plans, it's going to continue to push the budget deficit in California. You need to have pension fund reform in Illinois, where there's a $100 billion unpaid pension fund liability. Every state should consider evolving from the current defined benefit plans to a defined contribution plan that gives the employee more wherewithal and more portability in
but
how they invest the pension
fund.
Why don't
the states do that? Is it that the lawmakers are captive to the public employee
unions? I
think
it's a question of wants the lucrative aspect of defined benefit plans and the ever-increasing liability of just tax the future generation is seen as a strategy for sustaining these programs that they're going to continue doing them. But what we need to do is reverse course at the state level, and this should happen not only in California but in Illinois and throughout. The governors of this nation are going to have to look at all these state pension fund plans and evolve into a more defined contribution plan as opposed to a defined benefit.
To Roebling's point of politicians being short-term thinkers in a term limit situation, if I'm going to campaign for governor of Illinois and I'm going to talk about pension reform, that's not a very sexy issue. How do you sell that?
Well, you have to sell it when the wolf is at the door and people are saying the state is going to shut down. I mean, we have gotten ourselves in Illinois into this very similar but smaller quagmire that they find in Sacramento. And you've got Pat Quinn, who before he even took office—
He's the governor of Illinois.
And these tax and spend politicians don't seriously consider reducing the size of government. We don't necessarily in Illinois, I mean, in Sacramento or in Austin, Texas, or wherever you are, I don't think you necessarily need all of the government that you have. We take government as an unalloyed good. Frequently, government is wasteful and unproductive, and it's robbing resources from a productive sector of economy.
We will be back after this, continuing with our final half hour of Beyond the Beltway tonight, coming to you live from Chicago. We want to hear from you. 1-800-723-8289. We're going to be talking about Colin Powell and the future of the Republican Party. Stay with us.
Now there's a new, fast way to get rid of itchy, irritated skin. It's Maximum Strength Cortisone 10 with a new, easy-relief applicator. Works fast, and it's not messy. Just dab it on wherever you have skin irritation. The Cortisone 10 liquid formula works on contact, relieving your itch for hours with the strongest itch-relief medicine without a prescription. Maximum Strength Cortisone 10 with its new, easy-relief applicator. Lose the mess. Feel the heal.
Use as directed.
Psst, hey, over here.
What?
Yeah, it's me. The printed internet directions you crumpled up and left in the back seat. What's with the cold shoulder lately?
Oh, right. I'm sorry. I got a TomTom GPS.
What?
Yeah, I kind of got tired of risking my life trying to read you while driving, so now I just plug in an address and TomTom gets me there much faster with clear spoken directions.
Well, that's dumb.
No, what's dumb is the 18 steps you'd give me just to get out of the driveway.
I was just being thorough.
Say goodbye to printed internet directions. Say hello to TomTom.
We are back tonight on Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We want to hear from you, 1-800-723-8289. At the beginning of this program tonight, we are talking about Guantanamo Bay and the fact that this is probably the first chink in the armor of the very popular president, Barack Obama. And one of the reasons that he has had such popularity and such success so far, I think, has been some of the problems in the Republican Party. We've been hearing about this for years, this conservative, moderate split in the Republican Party, but we really saw it in the election of last November, and now this is an issue that's really playing out, and I'm interested in the thoughts of our guests tonight about where the Republican Party goes in the future. We had Colin Powell today on with Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation saying, hey, I am still a Republican. We heard Dick Cheney, the former vice president, say a few weeks ago that he would rather side with Rush Limbaugh than with the former general Colin Powell. And Colin Powell and others, Tom Ridge from Pennsylvania, Jim Thompson from our own state of Illinois, a longtime Republican governor here in Illinois, they have all said that the party needs to stop trying to legislate what goes on in our bedrooms and pay attention to the bread and butter economic defense Republican issues. Chris Roebling, what is it going to take for the Republicans to heal this rift and get back on track?
We have to be an open tent party that is excited about having every one of the people that you mentioned, plus Rush Limbaugh. In other words, the Tom Ridge, the Jim Thompson, the Colin Powell, the Dick Cheney. We have to be so much bigger. Sarah Palin. We have to be embracing of people, and they have to know that they have a level playing field, which means that they contest a primary, they seek a nomination. Sometimes they're going to win, sometimes they're not. But because they're getting into that primary and it's a level playing field, then they're on board for supporting the winner of the primary in the general election. I think that the party is unquestionably the conservative party in our spectrum. And I also think it's the reform party in our spectrum. The status quo party are the Democrats, in my opinion. And I was a Democrat until I was 20 years old or 22, I guess. And that's when I really became a Republican. And so we're always going to be the conservative party. We're always going to be the reform party. But we have to be the open tent and the level playing field party so that we can offer solutions. Solutions are more important than ideology when you're speaking outside of the party precincts.
But what happens when a person steps forward and they are a moderate Republican and they are denounced by Rush Limbaugh, who calls them a rhino, a Republican in name only?
I think that to the extent that happens, that's not good for the party. And if it's being said of Colin Powell, or if it's being said of some congressman someplace, that, you know, that's going to happen. It's free speech and everybody can say what they want. But folks, if you're a Republican and you are listening, let me tell you, we desperately need to come together and to make ourselves attractive to the independents, the moderates, the disaffected Democrats, and all the people that will help us get to 50% plus one.
Ron Gibbs, would you like nothing more than to keep having Rush Limbaugh out there as the symbol of the party to beat up on?
Well, and jokingly I would, but substantively for a country, no. And I think, Chris, you're right on as far as what the Republican Party needs to do. And it's unfortunate because I think the party is trying to find itself, and it is going after the Guantanamo Bay issues here that are sort of chinks into the armor. But there's a bigger picture. To hammer Colin Powell as a respected and as a Vietnam vet by Mr. Cheney, who, you know, five times got a deferment from going to Vietnam, is disingenuous to the Republican Party. Colin Powell, there should be plenty of room for him to be under the tent, as you say. And it's a disservice to me for having substantive debate here. And we're getting off onto rhetoric and onto certain issues that are not really the core issues which we should be debating, whether it is health care, whether it's environmental issues. Let's get to those. And I want the Republican Party to be the loyal opposition and not just a fringe party isolated and going into hibernation.
Ralph Connor.
Once again, it is really a question of subterfuge and playing on imagery. Colin Powell is now the spokesman for the moderates in the Democratic Party. He is only a Republican only because he's trying to drag the party further to the left from the center. Michael Steele is now the new Colin Powell, meaning that he is the black that is positioned in the Republican Party to appeal to moderates, younger people, things that Colin Powell used to do. The whole ruse of whether or not conservatism is the downfall of the Republican Party is a straw man, phony argument. George W. Bush, spent countless years trudging through compassionate conservatism. He expanded the size of government with his Medicare drug entitlement. He continued to earmarks in Congress, even to the point of all types of spending bills that were just totally ridiculous that he supported along with the Democrats. He got no support for it. Colin Powell, knowing that McCain represented the maverick, non-conservative end of the Republican Party syndrome, still would not endorse a fellow military person in John McCain, even though McCain was to the center and to the left of any of the Republican candidates. So the party is not moving to the left. I mean, the party is not moving to the right. That is not the problem with the Republican Party, a trend to the right. That is simply a ruse of the media and a ruse of the current Democratic administration.
But, Ralph Connor, many commentators have suggested that John McCain's key blunder in that campaign was choosing a young, attractive governor.
It was only when Sarah Palin was appointed that the campaign was even energized.
I could not agree with Ralph more. I think that this I learned long ago when I was playing, you know, board games as a kid, you don't listen to your opponent for advice. And the last thing that the Republicans—
That's the problem with the Democrats. They're being defined by the media and the tank with the Democrats, and they're not listening to anybody with their opponent.
The problem with the Republicans is that they're listening to the media and to the Democrats, and we shouldn't. John McCain, and this was said most eloquently by Ann Coulter, every time we run the experiment and you put up a moderate, we get whacked on the head. And that's exactly what happened with John McCain. Then the moderates come back and say, the problem is we're too conservative. And you say, well, wait a minute. We didn't nominate the conservative candidate for president. We nominated John McCain. And look how he did. OK, I don't think that it's I believe that conservatism is the North Star, OK, for the Republican Party. And I believe it is precisely as Reagan described it. That's where we are intellectually. That's the font of knowledge. That's not going to get us into trouble. What gets us into trouble is fighting among ourselves, because even Ronald Reagan supported moderate and liberal Republicans. In 1976, he named Richard Schweiker from Pennsylvania as his running mate. So you cannot say it is a false Hobson's choice to say the Republican Party cannot survive as conservative dominated, okay, when you've got a guy like Ronald Reagan who always had a place in his heart for moderate and independent Republicans.
But he was the great communicator.
Right.
And he was able to take a conservative message and able to make the tent bigger. And I disagree with you. I really think that the Republican Party is so to the right that it's doing itself a disservice. And I don't see where you're broadening the base to hammer a Colin Powell and to say that he is not a worthy representative of the Republican Party.
We have to get beyond personality and deal with the issues.
When you see the issues, you'll see
why Rush Limbaugh is being attacked. It has nothing to do with personality. It has to do with the fact that he stands for conservatism
therefore you're defining
it's conservatism
the base of the
and capitalism
the right.
that are under attack.
Rush is defining just exactly what you're saying.
But can I say that
Colin Powell, the spokesman for the Democrats,
to complete the circle, Reagan instituted the 11th commandment. He was not going to engage.
Thou shalt not speak ill of a fellow Republican.
In public, I mean, in private.
But Rush Limbaugh, Chris, is not following the
11th. Did I associate myself with Rush Limbaugh at the beginning? No, I did not. And I think that Cheney stubbed his toe on this. I think that they fell into the trap that Ralph is describing. I think that the fact is we are bigger than any individual. We have got answers and solutions for people. We can revive this economy, reduce the cost of government, and make the delivery of the services that are essential more efficient. That's where we need to be.
We've got to talk public policy instead of personality. Get away from the Rush Limbaugh demonization and go in with the fact that the Congressional Budget Office is saying that your cap-and-trade legislation is going to cost every taxpayer in America $1,600 a year. We got to look at the whole idea of nationalizing the health care system in America, the impact that's going to have on poor people. These are the critical issues. We got to get off the dime.
That still the public school structure still robs opportunity from the
Republican Party needs now is new leadership. Okay,
and I think the same of the Democratic Party.
We've got four more years.
Never been elected to anything. That's a rule that is strong.
Right now, your spokesperson, you've got to admit, is a Rush Limbaugh.
It's Michael Steele.
Where is he? He's not out there. There's no charismatic leader in the Republican Party who can do what, Chris, what you're saying. Make that tent broader. Bring in a Colin Powell.
Do I lack charisma?
Well, you do.
And he's doing a great job.
Dick Cheney has now sort of emerged as the go-to guy in the Republican Party. Michael Steele is the go-to guy as
the chairman of the RNC, and I think everybody needs to give him respect for that position.
Nobody knows who he is.
We're going to take a break, but we want to hear from you on this topic. We've got 15 more minutes. 800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. This is Beyond the Beltway from Chicago.
Hey, Mini Dealer.
Hi.
I heard every Mini has no-cost maintenance, but does that really include the important stuff?
Try me.
Brake pads.
Included.
Air filters.
Included.
Oil changes.
Included.
Brake rotors?
Included. Look, I can include stuff for 3 years, and that could save you up to $1,100 over our competitors.
Wiper blade inserts.
No, that's not included.
Really?
I'm just kidding. They're included.
Wow.
Boot to Bonnet no-cost maintenance covers 3 years or 36,000 miles, and it's only from Mini. For details, visit miniusa.com/info.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
We are back tonight on Beyond the Beltway, coming to you live from our home base at the Sirius XM radio studios in Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. 1-800-723-8289. We're talking about the split in the Republican Party. What does the GOP have to do to get back together? Let's go to outside Cleveland, Ohio. Steve is listening to us on WKBN. Hi, Steve.
Hello, and you guys have a great show tonight. And what I wanted to talk about was I was hearing the talk about Colin Powell, and I tell you, I agree with Dick Cheney. I thought Colin Powell had become a Democrat.
Steve, let me ask you a quick question. Then why, when Bob Schieffer asked him this morning, "Are you still a Republican?" Why didn't he just say, "Oh, no, I've switched over to the Democrats"? He wholeheartedly says, "Yes, I am a Republican."
Well, I mean, you know, that's a very good question, because, I mean, if you support Obama, he not only endorsed Obama, actively campaigned for him, and the type of candidate that he's telling that, you know, that the Republicans should be like was John McCain. And John McCain was this, you know, fellow in the military, like the one spokesperson there said. And, you know, and what did he do? He endorsed Obama. And the thing is, and he, by endorsing Obama, he endorsed all of Obama's policies, which, you know, tells me that if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, flies like a duck, then it is a
Okay, but Steve, you know, thank you for joining us, Steve.
From a party standpoint, the answer to that is he will lose his next primary. Or the answer to that is no one in the next primary will take Colin Powell that seriously. It just withers and dies on its own. I think Colin Powell, it is not up to me to say he is or isn't a Republican. Today he said he is. Fine.
But
If he's going to go off and support Democratic candidates, then nobody else in the party is going to listen
but
to him.
Roebling, here's my question. Is it bad for the Republican Party in if there's many Americans out there who consider themselves independents to hear folks blasting this patriot, Colin Powell, because he endorsed Obama last fall?
Every time we've had a presidential campaign, every time since I can remember, 1964, there have been maybe not Democrats for Goldwater, but there were Republicans for Lyndon Johnson. There were Democrats for Richard Nixon. There were Republicans for Jimmy Carter. I mean, there's always been a small group. They've usually been Northeastern people who have got disaffected from their own party for whatever reason. It's no big deal. So Colin Powell went for Barack Obama. There are other attributes of Barack Obama that may have had may have played a part in that, okay? And the historic nature of Barack's candidacy. I'm not going to look past. The point is Republicans have solutions, and we need to offer those solutions to the voters who need solutions because government is failing everywhere.
And my point would be in this point where there is, in my opinion, a real lack of leadership in the Republican Party, then the RNC and Mr. Steele should step to the forefront with an agenda that outlines a broad enough tent for people to get under. And I think, right. Ralph, you've articulated, and to me still, to only part of what you say in articulating, trying to articulate the Republican base. Somebody's got to do that and go back to the basics of 101 politics. What is the RNC putting forth as a platform? And is it big enough for a Colin Powell and a Cheney and everybody to come together on, or is it not?
Colin Powell is a representative for the Democrats, and his goal is to prove that the Democrats are the
only
thing that's relevant.
Forget about Colin Powell. Then go to the issue I'm saying of defining an agenda here that we can react to.
The idea is that the agenda has to be public policy. We need to stop the cap-and-trade legislation. We need to stop the nationalization of the health care system.
But do you,
those are the critical issues.
We need to open opportunities for our students.
I want to ask Ralph Connor the question that I asked Chris Roebling. Colin Powell is an American hero based on his military
so
service.
So is John McCain.
So
why didn't Colin Powell back John McCain?
Because I guess I'm making the argument
because he's too much of a moderate.
He did not like
certainly
Sarah
not because
Palin.
He was a conservative.
That he felt that Sarah Palin was
she wasn't
not
running for president.
She was he wanted to put her a heartbeat away. And I can't
so
get
so now
inside.
We're better with Joe Biden a heartbeat away.
Yeah.
It doesn't hold
Come
water.
On,
let's
John.
See. If, let's see if
it
we can go to.
It doesn't hold water.
We let's knew go. that wasn't a valid argument back in Denver.
Where's Joe Biden now? He's in Bosnia somewhere. Let's go to El Paso, Texas. Annette listens to us on KTSM. Hi, Annette.
Yeah, I have a comment on what they're talking about the future of the Republican Party, and I noticed that one of the panelists mentioned that. Inciting a big tent included such names as Jim Thompson. And I'm wondering if that panelist also thinks we should have a place for George Ryan.
George Ryan's in prison right now.
I know that.
I don't
I
see
that.
Him getting out anytime soon.
My answer is no. I don't like George Ryan, and I don't want George Ryan in my party. You can have him in your party.
Thank you very much.
I think he deserves a presidential
much.
Pardon.
Thank you very much.
But let's talk back about the Reagan Revolution. Reagan was able to get blue-collar, northern, white ethnic union Democrat guys, they call them the Reagan Democrats. He was able to get the Bible Belt folks. He was able to get the Northeastern Country Club Republicans. How does that coalition come?
Do you know what? The answer to that question is political timing in history. And if you remember earlier when Ronald Reagan ran for president, he lost.
Right.
And the times changed, and therefore the political environment changed for Reagan to be the right person at the right time to build that coalition. Where right now is there isn't that opportunity, I don't believe, for the Republicans to build that same base that Ronald Reagan did.
The final question is the Democrat on our panel. Could the novelty of Barack Obama wear off at some point, and that help lead to a Republican
resurgence? Well, I think the Republicans would hope that, but they've got to come to the table with an agenda to really challenge the Obama public opinion right now, which is very supportive of his agenda, and he's going to implement it until the Republicans can do something to really counter with sound policy and not rhetoric.
That is Democrat Ron Gibbs on our panel tonight. We've also been joined by Republican Chris Roebling and Ralph Connor of the Heartland Institute here in Chicago. Thank you, gentlemen, one and all. It's been my pleasure to be here tonight for Bruce Dumont. Beyond the Beltway is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio and Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart, who helped make this radio program possible tonight. Until next week at this time, this is John Dempsey. Good night from Chicago.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If your credit card debt is out of control, if you're in over your head dealing with monthly payments, there is powerful information you need to know about the government's bailout of credit card companies. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. With monthly payments you can afford, credit card companies have been given billions and need to clean their books once and for all. And that's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with payment plans customized for you. It's yours free by calling 1-800-388-0141. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes and learn how we have saved our clients millions. Live better, debt-free. For free information on how to settle your credit card debt in a government bailout era, call 1-800-388-0141. That's 1-800-388-0141. 1-800-388-0141.
This is Brian.
Brian, it's your buddy. Unexpected traffic jam.
Unexpected
traffic? Yeah, man. You know, you're rushing to get to a big meeting, and I'm like, surprise, let's hang out for a while.
Listen, traffic jam, I have a TomTom Go 740 now.
Ooh.
Yeah, it gives me detailed real-time traffic updates on my route, so I don't have to worry about you popping up and making me late anymore.
But I thought you liked our chance meetings, buddy.
I'm gonna have to ask you to stop calling me buddy.
Say goodbye to unexpected traffic jams. Say hello to TomTom.
Hey, Mini Dealer.
Hi.
I heard every Mini has no-cost maintenance, but does that really include the important stuff?
Try me.
Brake pads.
Included.
Air filters.
Included.
Oil changes.
Included.
Brake rotors?
Included. Look, I can include stuff for 3 years, and that could save you up to $1,100 over our competitors.
Wiper blade inserts.
No, that's not included.
Really?
I'm just kidding. They're included.
Wow.
Boot to Bonnet no-cost maintenance covers 3 years or 36,000 miles, and it's only from Mini. For details, visit miniusa.com/info.
I'm Carl Edwards. As a NASCAR driver, I can't let allergies slow me down. That's why I use Claritin. It works hard on my toughest allergy symptoms. And unlike many other allergy medicines, it won't make you drowsy. For me, Claritin really is the perfect allergy medicine. Stay alert, stay focused. Live Claritin Clear with non-drowsy Claritin.
Right now, you can get 10 free Claritin tablets for 10 free days of non-drowsy allergy relief with the Claritin 30 plus 10 bonus pack. 10 free tablets, 10 free days of relief at a store near you. Use as directed.
Hotels.com gives you a free night for every 10 nights you book. You can book 10 nights in Tulsa to get one free night in San Fran, or book 7 nights in Providence and 3 nights in Richmond to get one free night in Reno. But a combination you definitely can't do is 2 nights in Grated Cheesetown and 8 nights in Roller Rinkerton to get one free night in Rabbit Stewville. Because, unfortunately, none of those places exist. Get free nights with welcome rewards from Hotels.com. Join online or call 800-2-HOTELS.
Some exclusions and restrictions apply. See site for details.